Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another Supercoach Insider podcast. My name is Swizz here on a Tuesday night this week with Q&As, a little bit earlier this week. As I was just trying to work around my busy schedule, just continues to get busier and busier. I'm out at a concert on Wednesday and then out at a function on Thursday. So I thought I'd come here and do the live show tonight. We'll try to get back one on Friday as well before that game. But yeah, I thought Tuesday night, there's plenty of questions going as we come into round five, which is the second last of these first bye rounds. So Collingwood and Sydney do have the bye, so that will obviously be in people's thoughts and their plannings, definitely in mine. Well, not as much anymore because the original plan was, you know, probably would be trading Heaney at this point, but the guy is flying. So that's really taken a backward step. I will have my team up as well, probably put it up tonight. I actually tried to record before, but then I just had a little accident with my poor little puppy who was cutting himself, so I had to actually cut that short. So I will redo that and try to get that up tonight. But in saying that, there's not a lot in regards to changes for my team that I really want to do right at the moment. MJ will be joining us very soon from the coaches panel, so that's always exciting to have him and his years of experience of Supercoach. So do appreciate him putting his hand up to come up on the show this week. There'll be a lot of questions, obviously, me and him will answer. We're probably going to be on for till about 8:30 tonight. And then he's got a few other commitments as well as myself. So I will get through these questions, but thank you so many people joining, jumping on. Big congratulations first off to Benny Boy. As everybody would have seen, I was up in Queensland over the weekend celebrating his wedding, marriage to Katrina. So beautiful ceremony. Huge shout out to him. Huge shout out to Chris, my other co-host. We definitely talked about we need to get up and do some more group pods, which will be coming. It's just been hectic. Obviously, Ben planning the wedding and then on his honeymoon right now. So that's obviously taking up a lot of his time. But he will be back and firing hopefully from probably next week. And Chris is the same. He's apart from, been planning, Ben involved in Ben's wedding, he's been moving as well. So, you know, things that unfortunately happen with life, but he will be joining us again very soon. So we had some good banter at least at the wedding because I ended up captaining Heaney last week. Last minute decision to just because the guys had traded out, and I'm pretty sure Chris went Grundy. So, but then he managed to still outscore me with the way his team went on Sunday. So he did get back at me, and just the kind of way it goes. I'll talk it through with MJ, but some very interesting trade outs so far this week, especially in the top 1%. It's I was just looking through some of the numbers just before, and I was quite surprised at how high a couple particular one defender and one midfielder are. So, interesting to have a little view at that. I will get into some of these questions myself, and then hopefully MJ will be with us very soon. All right, so who we got first up? We got Sam. Now, this is going to be the biggest talking point, I think, for the week. Closey, I'm going to butcher his name the entire time. Is it too early? I think he's the one which it's probably not too early to go on. And it's just because it's 102K and we've got Howes this week. Now, you can definitely get through with having Blake Howes for one more week for sure. You know, the break even's not. Well, it's manageable. Like, okay, he's missed it the last 2 weeks, but it's 56. Like he started off with a 91, 64, and 68, so he definitely can reach that. And obviously, Closely's not going up, so we can definitely look at that. But I think that's not. I can see why people are doing that trade and to try to get the 120Ks. But I will ask MJ himself because he is with me now. MJ, welcome, mate. How are you?
Oh, mate, I appreciate you holding the thought down for me. It's nice to see you again, man. It's been a minute since we jumped on the Supercoach Insider podcast. I think it was pre-season. We did a last-minute Q&A session. So, no, it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to answering some questions for Supercoach.
I appreciate you coming on, mate. And my my neighbour there from a couple of streets away. So we should really do this in person one time. But
we probably could, couldn't we?
We probably could, actually.
Next time.
I do appreciate you coming on, mate. It's always good to have, as I was saying to everyone before, your experience and long knowledge of Supercoach to answer all these questions that people are throwing at me. Before we get into the questions, how are you, mate? And how's the Supercoach season going?
Probably like the Adelaide Crows, started with plenty of promise and hasn't quite flown out of the gate as quickly and strongly as I'd like. But no, I think I'm in an okay shape. I've got, like everything at the moment, it's about getting the right cash cows, not getting stuck with too many premiums that are stalling scoring at the top end, and really using your trade cadence and trade moves well early in the year. Your rank is a little flattering at some times, and also a little bit depressing based on the year, to quote Matthew Nix, which is dangerous to do at the moment. You're never as good as you probably think you are. You're never as bad as you probably think you are either at this time of the year. We're really going to get to see how teams have structured up, what they've done with premiums on the buy, with the right cows, how rookie roulette and their captaincy decisions have treated them over the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, man, it's going to be an interesting next sort of 6 to 8 weeks to see the moves, you know, start to unfold a little bit more for people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, can I ask, where are you ranked at the moment, mate?
To be honest, I wouldn't actually have a clue. I can check for you. I think I'm about 20,000, give or take.
Yeah, okay. So you and I aren't that far different. I think I'm 13,000 after a bit of a poor week this week, but... It's about getting that cash involved and also making those right moves. It's a bit disappointing I don't have Sharp and Dempsey, a couple of the rookies I missed, and bringing in Draper this week. I can't believe that actually trading a non-playing player in Sexton cost me 117 points, because I would have had to field Darcy and then I would have brought Brown in instead. But that's the way Supercoach goes sometimes. And then I was looking at it and I'm like, I do that trade and I'm up to about 3,000. You know, it's so close. Yeah, if you're inside the top 30,000, there's literally nothing between.
There's a couple of hundred points. Like, honestly, it's the difference between captaining Butters a couple of weeks ago and not having a Butters. Like, those are the sort of the swings. It's the difference between starting Gawn and not starting Gawn and starting a Grundy over Gawn. Like, it's a couple of hundred points. You can make up that every single week. So, no, nobody that's had a slow start should be really scared off, as long as, again, you've got those cows that you know are making your money. You don't have any of those premiums that are doing dropkick stuff at the top end. Okay. If you're in that solid space, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So the first question I was starting to answer, which was from Sam. Now, I've been butchering this name, but Closey.
Say it with confidence.
Yeah, no one will just say it. I usually do, but I'm like, I've got no idea. I didn't watch a huge amount of the Suns game, I must admit. Could potentially go early on him. I'm gathering most people are looking at Blake Howes as the guy to move on, as he's got the break even of 56. He has obviously got the three scores above that this year, but his last 2 weeks have been a little bit down. What are your thoughts about, well, I guess, firstly, Closely bringing him in and trading out Howes?
Yeah, so Closely jumping him in early. I think we're always, when we're looking for these guys and we're going ahead of the bubble, which is our more traditional trade cadence, the concern is, are they in the side for the foreseeable future? And based on that performance, it's injury or suspension, which is just luck outside of your control, that are the reasons he's not staying in that side. He played across that wing really, really nicely. I thought if it wasn't for a couple of Darcy and Reed-like performances, he probably would have got himself, you know, some kind of nomination. That's how good he was from that perspective. I've got no problem with you making that move. Yes, you're not making the money and seeing the initial movement, but it's about what you're doing with the secondary trade, mate, as you've mentioned. So whether it be getting off of a house or getting rid of one of those dead rooks like a Caulfield. He's still really popular at D8 in a lot of people's teams. And why people looked at a Draper last week was, I just got to get out of this guy that's doing nothing for me, and I'm going to make that move. So I have no problem with people making either of those moves. I don't think Howes is a high priority trade, as in if you don't do it this week, it's a disaster. With his break even, he's still, even if he only drops, you know, another 50 odd, you're still sitting pretty much in the ecosystem of where you thought you'd be heading into the buy. So to me, Howes can go. If you want to get rid of a Caulfield type, absolutely no problem. But yeah, I think you can go early, Sam, if you want to.
Yeah, I agree. That I've got a bit more confidence in him because of his performance and a couple of the other people. And to Maddie, I was just saying before, I did record my pod, but my doggy had a little cut that I had to go deal with. So I ended up ending it early, and I'll redo that later on. So that will be up. All right. And I know this has come up. I know my good mate Grimo was just messaging me about this. Lloyd Meek as an option at R2. It looks like people are talking about either Grundy because he's got the buy, even though his break even's quite friendly, but he does have the buy, or some people who have Jackson sitting in there at R2, who has now peaked at cash. The rumor is Darcy should be available for this week as long as he gets through training tomorrow. We'll start with just the Meek part. Do you see Meek as an option, if be it either long-term or as a short-term play?
I think he's beaten Reeves out. That's safe to say. Reeves had the first two games and was okay. Meek's looked really good, and it's no surprise that Hawthorn have been probably from a midfield cohesion looking at their best. So I think we can just kind of, some go, oh, he's not best 22. Until he absolute has a back-to-back stinker, he's safe, so that's fine. Personally, for me, the way I like to play the game, if Grundy is the only option you're moving out of the rucks at the moment, I'll talk about Jackson and what I think you could do with him, despite him hitting his break-even space, is I would be looking to capitalize on getting into a Rowan Marshall this week. You can get English if you like, but to me, Marshall's at the price point where he's just over that 600,000 marker. He's lost a bit of cash. And his fixture coming up, Pigmentality at Dr. Supercoach is kind of the guy I look to for my ruck wisdom in Supercoach. And he, in the preseason, when I spoke to him in the 50 most relevant episode about Rowan Marshall, said, starting is fine, but it'll be a slow. But once it gets to Grundy gone by territory, the fixture opens up, and his scoring should really open up. So for me, I would be, instead of going down to Meek, regardless of what that cash did for me, I would be looking to go up to a Marshall type. Gorn would be the other, but he's on the buy next week, so you can't do that. English, I still think Sam Darcy's getting enough ruck opportunities through there to see him pick up DPP and just clipping that ceiling a little bit. So for me, I'd go up to a Marshall, and then Jackson. With the matchup, not this week, but next week against West Coast, I wouldn't want to lose that matchup, even in a ruck share with Darcy, who's 50-50 to play this week. We'll know as teams drop later in the week. I'd be rather looking to get off one of the bench cows in my team, in my forward line. Maybe you're still running around with a Fisher at that point and you want to be able to turn him into your Flanders, maybe he's your pathway to Dacos, for example, for non-owners in 2 weeks' time. For me, Jackson is probably 3 weeks away from making that move. I don't want to miss that West Coast matchup.
Yeah, and that's where it gets hard, because that West Coast matchup is definitely very juicy. I don't mind Meek if you're not wanting Marshall and you are more set on English. But it is obviously a two-trade play there. But at the same time, like, Meek could easily make sort of 100 to 150K over the next sort of 3 weeks if he was to bang out hundreds. We know most rucks usually can, walk on the field and go 85 at least. It's just the question is he going 85, 90, which kind of makes him like a bad pick, or is he going, 110 over that sort of 3 or 4 week period? And then do you get into that situation where you get stuck because you're like, oh, well, I can't trade him now because he's going 105, 110. And then you don't make the move on English when you're meant to. And then you start dropping points because that's the play. And we've seen this too often where even like the short-term play with Hogan, which, well done to those people, because I was huge on that. People jumped on. Some people went straight away to Mackay or somebody else that they like, they moved somebody up to the forward line and brought in one of the midfielders that they needed. And it was the big tick. You got the 100K, you got the points when you needed, no problems. A couple of people messaging me now, I've still got Hogan, and I'm kind of losing points. And this is the hard thing with these mid-price jump up. But we saw people do it really well last year with Chase Jones. So I'm not against it because we've got the extra trades. Tex Walker was another example from a couple of years ago. But you've just got to make sure you move him on at the right time when that other player becomes available. In this case, it's Tim English. So not against it, like it, especially because of Grundy not playing this week. It is a way to get the rankings up. But, yeah, there is risk involved with all these sort of moves for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, well, and that was the next one, Maddie. Maddie Joe was talking about thoughts on Grundy, Howes, and Sexton out for Comden, Nick Martin, and closing. I'm not going to probably get us to answer in regards of what in trades, but we'll talk about some of the players more connected to that. So we have talked about Grundy. Obviously, Sexton's a bit of a dead pick, but mm-hmm. I think the next two are important. So Comden, did you watch the game and what were your thoughts about him?
Look, Toby Pink's not getting back in that side, unfortunately, for those that own Toby anytime soon. Strong, accountable key position defender, and then was getting involved in the transition across the flanks when they were trying to open up the ground a little bit more. It was a narrow field, so he might not get as many transition opportunities when they've got a bit more space at a Marvel Stadium or an MCG or some other matchups like that. But to me, again, we've got really three interesting downgrade options this week that we could almost take two of them this week and telegraph another for the following week as well. And Comben, for me, gives you that opportunity. I think we've got a little bit more challenges in some lines that, you know, Reed's kind of popped his money's back moving. Wilson's getting close for non-owners there. Sharp, you mentioned him at the top of the episode. His cash generation is well and truly back moving again. Darcy is still floating along. So we are in this interesting spot now where we might actually not need it, but we're going to take it. Absolutely. For me, if you don't get Comben this week, it's next week.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll do what he did, but I think he was excellent.
I think it's... So I sometimes get a little bit like, you know, going a bit like a couple of people went early on Tom Berry with that. You know, we've seen in the past where somebody comes down and goes really well, and then the second week they don't have such a great, score. But Comben, the role looks great. As you said, he's not, Pink's not coming in for him. At one point then I thought he was nearly Glenn Jakovic, the way he was just going at contested marks there. You get the free hit. I've got no problem, going early because... But you do get a free look. If I was choosing either of them, I would have gone Closey instead of Comben, just because he's that extra price. I'd hold off if you've got the possibility of doing that. The great thing is Supercoach have come out and said you only need the three games to get the dual position. So Comben obviously playing back. If he was to play those three games, by the time we get the dual positions come in for round seven, he will become a forward defender, which would be very huge. Nice for a lot of us. It's huge. He becomes probably nearly more of a lock than some of these other options just because, the dual position status for forward defender is going to be brilliant for our teams, especially for someone like me who has Buku Kamis. And then I can sort of swap them around, which is great. Nick Martin's the other one there. As a frustrated round one owner who did handball him off to Sarong, luckily. So it wasn't not awful, but ended up playing a drinking game with Chris every time Martin touched the ball, we had to drink. Was fun. Yeah, that was real fun. Your thoughts if, because I think his ownership's dropped down to about 16% when it started at 28%. Thoughts about grabbing Nick Martin this week? Because I feel like it's got to be this week if you're going to do it.
Yeah, it's this week or you're waiting for that DPP to pop and you're then starting to get guys like Williams off your ground. You're starting to see, because I don't think we're prioritizing our defenders and I don't think we need to. A lot of people have two premium defenders pretty safely, whether that be some combination of Dacos, Stewart, for example, just picking two names. Then there's a lot of people are still holding on to him, but have also jumped off. You've got a Yo who's there, and we're about to get this influx of options down back. And one of those is Nick Martin. So I don't think we need to prioritize trading in and around defensive premiums. That said, Nick Martin, I think the past 3 weeks is a fair summation of what he is, which is they want the ball in his hands. And when he gets time and space, he uses it relatively well. He's still butchering it a fair bit, to be fair. If you go, don't just look at the stats, watch the game. Even when he's not in pressure, He's still butchering it a little bit, and it's just not hurting from a super coach perspective like it was in the first 2 weeks of the season. So if you traded him out, I have no problem with you trading back into him again. He will be a defender for us. He will have DPP. But remember round one and round two, they are not crazy anomalies. They are anomalies, but they're not out of the box ones. So for me, I'm happy for you to trade into him. I think we're about to get some ripping options of value in the midfield for non-owners of Dacos. You've got a big trade gambit that's kind of worked out for you to this point, but you have got to not let that run away too far from you. So for me, Martin isn't just about Martin. Martin is about your structure and about what your plans are for the next 3 to 4 weeks. And if he helps you with the moves, absolutely got no problem with it. I think he's going to be around that 100 marker for us as a defender. And I think that's going to be enough at the price we're paying right now.
Exactly. And he's 530 this week. So he's gone up the 30K, 40K for the year. But the break even's 35 this week. So that's probably the danger. Because if he was to come out and go that 120 plus score again, you're starting to get to that point where it's like, well, I'm not going to pay that for him. I'll just go out and get one of the other guys. So if you are keen on him, go get him this week. Otherwise, maybe look at one of the other options. And yeah, like you traveling well, those who have him, awesome. But yeah, you've just got to weigh up who you think those sort of top six defenders are going to be. We've talked about Dacos, Sheezel, Stewart. We know they're in the mix. Ryan's flying and he's always up there. Sicily. So there's probably that one more spot. And you're talking about sort of Houston, Martin. Sinclair. There's plenty of options in there. So he's going to be in the mix, and maybe just he's still a little bit of value at 530. So no problems there. Even Hayden Young, like he bounced back and he looked good, and he's 30K cheaper. It's probably, and I know I don't know if I'm actually leaning more towards Young or Martin if I wanted to do that move. I think they're both, it's the difference of Young's playing midfield where Martin's playing that juicy halfback role. And they both had that sort of slow start. What are your thoughts if you had to decide between sort of Young and Martin if you're sitting in that position? Because they're both the same. I think they both started at 28% and they both went down to 16% ownership.
I prefer Young over Martin at this point in time, just personally. And part of that's also just a buy structure of how that's going to help you over the next sort of 8 weeks. But to me, I'd only lean on Young just because I trust his ability to not be out of the game and Nick Martin could find himself out of the game should a tag come his way, should the ball movement not get as free and as easy as it has been for Essendon, who've really been on the more uncompetitive side in contrast to what I think they would have hoped to be. So do they want to get the ball back in Redmond's hands a little bit more, who offered a lot of run and carry for them last year and has been impacted by Martin's arrival back there, it's safe to say. So I'd lean on Young over Martin, but the decision might be, no, I don't want to get a defender this week. I need the midfielder to become the defender. And so this is where it starts to become team dependent.
Yeah. And it's actually 15K difference. So I apologize for that. But I've had a couple of people message me saying they're more on the Martin train. I'm probably been more looking at Hayden Young. At some point too, we know Fife's going to, not be in that midfield and that he'll either go down or they're going to manage his minutes as well. They do have a pretty good draw to come up, West Coast Dogs, Richmond, after they get through this Port Adelaide match, which it doesn't really actually also seem to worry. They played Carlton the weekend, went up against that midfield and he scored 119, but it's the manner he does it. Another 9 tackles. He reminds me a little bit of Libber in that way. Yep. Like he's got that ability to score, not only getting the ball out in contested situations, but the pressure that he puts on. And if you're getting 30 points pretty well, locked in because you just know they're a tackling machine. Laird's always been the same. These guys I think probably if I'm going to choose that guy as my, which hopefully becomes my D6, I feel like it's Young ahead of Martin. So I hope that kind of answers that for you, Maddie. This is another good question. Is it too late for Sharp or Dempsey? I am a non-owner of both, hating life, but it was more the fact that, starting off my team, who was going to drop out, Wilson, Clark, in hindsight, it's a great thing. But you know, it's the way it went, and I didn't actually need the extra midfielder at the time, you know, and Dempsey, it was Dempsey versus Berry, and unfortunately it just didn't work out that way. But I've got a personal view on this, but yeah, I'll hear your thoughts first, mate.
My thoughts are, what are the trades you're moving over the next 3 to 4 weeks? We just talked about a bunch of options that are going to be ripe for the picking, but are available for us as early this week. Graham, Closey, Combin, just to name a few. You could even throw Ramsden if you really want to stretch and throw a fourth in there. So we've arguably got four guys that will be on the bubble in the next fortnight. How many downgrade trades do you need to make over this next 3 week period? Yes, Dempsey and Sharp have still got a lot of money to make. You do sometimes need to swallow your pride in Supercoach and just go, I've got it wrong, but I'm going to bank the cash. I'm not anti getting Sharp or Dempsey. All I'm saying is, what are you doing over the next month? What are the trades and how are you getting to where you need to get to? Because you've got a bunch of cows that are present. It's not like we're looking at options now, mate, going, oh, it's getting sparse. We're going to need to make sure there's that 100K still left on Sharp to make. Yes, he's made 100, but we need to swallow the pride. To me, I go, yes, you can make those moves. But what else are you doing? And have you got other avenues that are going to make the same money from this point onwards, knowing you've already lost a lot of money opportunity from Dempsey and Sharp? Based on that, I know it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence, but I would say unless you've got like Lazaro, Sexton, Caulfield, like you are dead cow city and you are desperately needing to kickstart cash, then okay, you might need to do a bunch of downgrades and be a week or 2 weeks behind on your upgrade cadence to everyone. But personally to me, you can get them, but I just factor the options that you now have presented to you first.
Yep. I'm not as big on the Dempsey one. Like I feel like it could still be a slow burn for another 100K over the next sort of 5 weeks. Again, I feel like he gets pushed around a little bit where in what position he needs to play. It's it was the wing roll and he's played a bit of half forward and potentially forward pocket. I think it's very dependent on what Geelong's lineup could be at any given week. Where Sharp, we know he's been locked into the wing. That hasn't been the problem at all. Played brilliantly on the weekend. But, yeah, the fact that he's got that 126 now in his cycle for the next couple of weeks as well. They do have West Coast coming up in 2 weeks that we've all been talking about with Jackson. So potentially there on the open spaces of Optus, you know, he could go massive again. And if he was to go another 100, the 150 to 200K on top of the 130 he's already made is not out of the question for him. And then, the difference, because obviously Sharp's been in the system longer than what Dempsey is too. So you've got to be a little bit mindful of that. So I don't mind the idea that, you know, you could potentially side swap one of your rookies to Sharp, because I feel like there's potential where he could still get up to, you know, 400K isn't out of the complete question there. And also, if you're trying to restructure your side, I feel like people are going to be moving either, you know, your Roberts or, there's probably other players who are going to get dual position that you might move around where the extra midfielder might come in handy by then. I'm more on Sharp than what I would be on Dempsey. Fair shout. Personal thing.
Yep, fair shout.
Jai, English or Marshall? So we did talk about this a bit earlier with like Marshall's going to hit his sweet spot. I don't feel like English might put 10 points on. Obviously he's way more expensive. So it's nearly 100K difference still. English probably I'd like to think English drops more because of his high break even this week, but he has gone 200 against the Bombers before. I don't know if he's going to do it this time against like a Goldstein, but yeah, he does have this potential to make his break even at any point. But like watching Rowan Marshall at the end of last year when he finally, you know, he had the first ruck by himself all last season but really came to his own in the second half. I can see a world where Marshall could match English for the rest of the season. Like he is such a key player for them. And he was probably, in a way, through the week, I was watching the actual, obviously being a Richmond supporter, watched him versus Nan Curvis closely, and they both kind of were zoning back and making sure they were taking the intercept marks, and he does really well. And he kind of got overshadowed a little bit by it because of how good Nate Kervis's performance was. But Marshall was just as equally as good. I think with their run, as you said earlier, he could definitely be that number one ruck over, even if it's up to the bye period at least. English might come into his own as the season goes on, but I think Marshall's as safe as houses and just saving 100K.
Yep, couldn't have said it any better. I'd take Marshall over that. The only reason you'd show some hesitancy is if Tom Campbell comes in this week, given that Ross Lyon said they might want to protect him. But let's take that at face value. But to be fair, Ross did say that pretty much every week, last year as well.
Yeah, he did. And that's the thing. We kept seeing Tom Campbell named every week on those extended benches, emergency every week. And it was probably like, oh, I can't get him because of this. And it just never happened. His break even 120 this week, potentially Marshall will be around that mark, but the following week, it'll really drop back because his 79 will come out if he was to have a good game this week. So you can potentially hold one more week, but if you're looking at, say, maybe it's Jackson, but then you're going to miss Jackson probably with his West Coast. The fact that it's Grundy out, Marshall in, and it's only probably 100K difference. And that might be the 100K that people are going, how's down at Closely. Anyway, I feel like that's an easier get than trying to find 200K to get up to English. We talk about Tom Campbell, but it's the same argument with English every week too. Is Rory Lobb coming in this week? Like Rory Lobb is dominating the VFL way more than what Tom Campbell is. We know we've got Darcy in there at the moment, and we hope Darcy stays in and they want to give time to the young fella. But maybe it's, maybe it's a Jamara one week, or you never know, somebody else goes down and then Lobb comes in. And if Lobb's in, he's probably going to get more ruck time as it is. So, there's just the same worry there.
Yep, fair shout.
Global, you lost to Chris last week, poor mate. Kev, thanks for following, mate. Always appreciate it. Global's complimenting on your hair, mate, and it does
look great. Oh, there's always one. There's always one in every stream.
Always one.
Matt,
hopefully you just heard our, because everybody's asking about Grundy, so not a problem with that. Matt, also keen to hear people's thoughts on paying top dollar for Zach Merritt. I'll straight away say this. This was actually a discussion. I don't know if it was Friday night or even Saturday at the wedding at some point, but we're like, do we just have to pay up for Zach Merritt this season? We're not going to get him cheaper as always. Is Zach Merritt somebody that you are looking at, MJ?
Yeah, he absolutely is. But history would say he will have one game where he won't perform, and that will drastically drop over a 3-week price cycle, $50,000 to $60,000 off him. I'm really anti getting a guy that I think is stoppable, and Zach Merritt is stoppable, from paying all that big money up. People, for example, that paid up for Caleb Sarong. Last week he was okay, but it was a tough matchup. And so to me, when we've got a power of cheap options coming our way, like Dawson is two or three kicks from hitting targets, from being a poor starting squad option to being 110, 115 every single week. So why would I spend potentially $80,000 to $100,000 more for, on a week-on-week basis, who I would say is a comparable option? Well, I'd take a Dawson, for example, over that. You're not doing it yet, but the moment Clayton Oliver goes back-to-back with vaguely reminiscent Clayton Oliver scores, you're jumping on that. Errol Goulden's still relatively going to be at a cheaper price point for us than what we started with him for. LDU for non-owners there, all it takes is for him to get a little bit more share of the ball in that midfield. And these are guys that are all going to be in that, 500-ish thousand price range. Man, over a time of a 6-week period, that's almost an extra upgrade that I could afford by just saving that 100K and getting a completed team faster, getting the cows off the field, and guys that I think are just as good as scoring options week on week. I wouldn't pay up for Zerit. I'd just cop it on the chin. We know he's a gun Supercoach scorer. 120, he could turn up at halftime every single week. He's that good. But I think we've also got options that are just as good, that are at a cheaper price, that I don't want to pay up for.
100%. And is it the whole reason why I started Libra over Merit to start off with? Because Zeret is taggable, where Libra will never be tagged. And that's the whole difference between the two of them. And they're going to score probably similar. Is it why Merit's flying at the moment, looks awesome. Yep. Is the, you know, we're credit to anybody who did start him, my wife.
Absolutely.
And
more than doesn't it?
But he, yeah, but yeah, there will be a game there where the some, and it could be as early as this week. They are playing the Dogs, and Libba will go head to head with someone. He did it with Real in that, I think it was a round three matchup. Would not surprise me if that first bounce, Libba is hanging off him. You know, he might go 15 tackles this week, Libba, because he's not going to, there's no way they're going to let Merritt run around and do whatever he wants. It's not, the Bulldogs are one team that do. And we see this every year, because what happens is teams have all preseason, got 3 months to put in their structures in place, and they come in and back their systems. And we get six rounds in, and Lachie Neale's been big on this, where he has come out and gone 35 touches for the first 6 weeks. And then it's usually Kane Corns leads it in the media because he's on everything. He's the new Eddie Maguire. And he comes out and goes, oh, back in my day, we tagged. Why don't other teams do it these days? To stop these guys being so influential. And then they usually come up to a team who does have a tagger, and they go, yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. You know, our structure's not working. Let's tag. And it happens every season around this sort of point. So it will happen to Merritt. And then if not this week and the next couple of weeks, because, they'll be the media will start, you know, talking about it more and more. Usually because there's nothing else to talk about, but yeah. I think that covers that. Actually, shout out to our mate Ben, Ben Ashton, who's 11th overall. Actually, I was trying to get him on the pod. He said, once I'm top five, I'll come on. So fingers crossed he moves up. I love that confidence. Yeah,
no pressure, Ben.
No pressure there, mate. We've answered the Grundy to Meek, so just rewind or go back to this when we've done it. I know a lot of these questions is about what do I do with Grundy Meek. So not a problem at all. We've talked also about Jackson being 600K. I don't mind it, the fact that, you know, you could potentially trade him to one of the premiums out there, but we have talked about the fact that they do play West Coast in 2 weeks and, you know, Jackson could go great, but we still haven't had Darcy confirmed, so we've got to hold off for this one. I won't give this one too much time. Jared Lyons, it all depends on if he plays, mate. If he plays, actually we will, because the hard thing is with this is if he comes in, is he just a 1 week wonder again and then he gets dropped out because, you know, they clearly don't see him in the best 22. He's more there of a break glass situation. One of our mids is out and Lyons comes in. Is that something you would agree with there, MJ?
Yeah. We're only about 2 months away from seeing Will Ashcroft from coming back into that team. It's going to take another injury to a McCluggage, a Dunkley, a Neale, and even a Zorko. Like, one of those four has got to go down injured. As great as his break-even is, as good as his Supercoach scoring is, the reality is you are flirting with a week-in, week-out miss, and that's worse. No, I wouldn't be trading into a guy, even if he's named this week. Nah, I'd be heading towards some of those cheaper options that I feel have better job security than Lyons.
Yep, no problems. I'm scrolling past a few of these questions just because we've actually answered them above. That does seem to happen. This is an interesting one. Sam Berry anyway should probably be traded out, but DeGoey as an option. I did actually talk about him very quickly in preseason just because I thought, you know, he could be Collingwood's number one midfielder this year. He's going to do it one season where he's just going to have a massive year. But, you know, I always worry about how high can he actually sort of go. What are your thoughts on somebody like a DeGoey who, you know, is 432K, which is quite cheap. And though he's had a couple really poor scores, we know if he sort of gets going, I just kind of worry about like where he's, you know, because he had like the 39 against St. Kilda and that sort of stuff kind of scares me off. But if he gets going on a run, Do you think he could be a possibility at that price, or would you just not even consider somebody like that? And I guess that also brings in the Jason Horne-Francis discussion too, because he's around that exact same price.
So the good news is you don't have to make a call on it this week with Collingwood being on the bye. And then we are 1 week away from DPPs. Gone are the days, I think, in Supercoach where we're waiting for that Sunday night sort of Al Patton tweet out where it's like, finally, yes, I got lucky. I think there's so much good information out there. And Supercoach are pretty transparent too. They're telling us in different articles, whether it be behind the paywall in Code Sports or other spots, they're actually giving us the data that gives us good leading indicators. So the reason I bring up DPP is you're about to have Bonner, Amon. Okay, people aren't probably on Amon anymore. Nick Martin, Roberts, McKercher. You mentioned a couple of options. Karmas, Combin. Our back lines are about to get flooded with options, and players such as a Zach Williams, Mossimo D'Ambrosio, and others are about to become options we bring in as upgrade options through our midfield. Dugowie's the kind of guy I feel like could be a season-winning selection. He's got an incredible ceiling about him. He could not have been any worse over the past 5 weeks. And the good news is you're not paying for what he was at over, mid 500,000s. You're now paying for him. Even if you wait the week after Port Adelaide and you get the DPP hit, then you go, that's $450,000, $480,000. You're still saving money and you get to see it again. And then they run into Essendon. Great matchup. Carlton, okay. Hewitt's probably more likely to go to one of him or Dacos, and that's okay. But then it's West Coast. So, boy, they're going to put their foot on the throat of West Coast. They need every percentage point they can get, Collingwood, this year. And I could see Dacos and Dugowie really dominating in that game. So, to me, I think it's very team-dependent, mate. It is the quick answer. But, yeah, I would be doing it after round six. I wouldn't want to jump into it in the Port Adelaide matchup. I'd give up $30,000, see what the DPPs are and what moves I can make. Yeah, I think it's a potentially season-winning pick.
Yeah, and these are these real left-field picks. As we talked about pre-season, like good mate JP, all over Harry Mackay. Yeah. I know I had a couple of questions about him in here. And this is the difference where you jump on these players at the right time. And ahead of the pack. Hopefully they become seasoned, but even if you can take them to the buys with the sort of a good fixture and then potentially look at moving them there or pivoting them, because somebody like him could definitely spike, because you want players who can put in those massive scores to spike their price really quickly. So if he went, two or three scores of 120 plus, and he could give himself up to 550, 600 in no time. All of a sudden, those options that MJ talked about before, Dawson, Clary. Clary's a big one that I've seen in a lot of the questions. If Clary gets anywhere under 550 and he's looking good, he will be in everybody's side. Is Dugowie a place getter potentially for that? Yeah. Is the Horne-Francis move? Now, I'll say straight out, Horne-Francis is not getting dual position, because I've had that question, will not be getting it. So don't be DMing going, because we know that for sure right now. Unless, and if Ken Hinckley plays him 100% forward the next 2 weeks, okay, come back, and then he's nah me, whatever. But it's not going to happen. So, but as a potential option who's going to have midfield time while Wines is out, we know he's getting CBAs. We know the kid can play. Potentially he's in that same boat as Dugowie, but I'm not thinking him as a season keeper, but if he can bang out a couple more 120 games, he can spike up for sure. So they're not awful picks, but at the same time, you've got to be prepared to the fact that they may cost you two trades, one to get rid of them now and the one, for later on. I did see something there. Now, I'm surprised that nobody has asked this until now, and this has come up. But James Jordan is, I think, he's currently just gone to the most traded out player this week. Now, I don't have him, but I'm shocked that I haven't had a question. I haven't even had this DM to me yet. Who are we putting James Jordan to? Because he's an obvious trade. 100%. There's no doubt about that. So What are your thoughts with him in that 350 price range? Are you trying to get him down to try to get someone up? I'm basing on the fact that people may not have that much cash to just throw him to someone. So it's probably a two trade option. But what would you be thinking of trying to do with a Jordan if you've got him?
Yeah, the answer is he should be the most traded out player this week. Politely, he's done his job for us. He's not set the world on fire, but he's made enough money for us. He's protected a few poor cash cow scores on the field for us. We would have loved a few more 90s and tons out of him that we didn't get, but that's okay. To me, whether you go up or down is very dependent on what your current forward structure looks like. Do you have a Flanders? If not, there's a really easy pathway to do that. There's no DPPs from the data that I can see or that people that I know have actual line of sight on the data that's telling us any top line forward premiums look like coming our way in 2 weeks' time. That could change, but it doesn't look like it, which means Flanders, whether he plays half back, half forward, mid, wherever it is, he's a top liner. To me, that's an easy move. I'm going to presume a lot of people don't have Heaney. Oh, sorry, have Heaney, and he's on the buy this week, so it doesn't matter. They're not making that move anyway. And then Jackson's the other, but you're probably not trading into him now. You're rather going to wait a couple of weeks. So if you don't have Flanders, Jordan up is the easy pathway. Otherwise, taking him down, either using some DPP, getting Comben early, and then being able to maximize some other mid prices or some cash cows that have stalled out their price is absolutely a play too. But it really depends if you own Flanders or not.
Yeah, no, for sure. And on that, before people hunt me down as well, yeah, so it is, yeah, 12% for all coaches, but I do try to focus on the top 1% because that's the chasing pack that I want to. So yeah, he's sitting there. Actually, he's now leveled up with Howes, both him, which is 28.7% for both of them, which will become pretty well nearly all those people in that bracket. Very interesting, in the top 1% of coaches, the fourth most traded person out this week is Sarong. I'm genuinely shocked in that. They do play
West Coast. That's a rage trade.
That is a rage from the top owners. I would have thought you have way more issues than that. So Sarong and Stewart both up there, even Tuke Miller. Like, I was huge on getting Tuke Miller over Steele. I know Steele had a massive game this week, but Tuke's drill coming up, I was seeing, and a few people messaged me on that going, oh, you know, but Steele, look at that. He's already scored 60 points more, and I've got 100%. But I was thinking long-term for it. Tuke, you know, he's still got, I think it's North Melbourne twice, got Richmond again, West Coast, Hawthorn. It's such a great draw for the Suns that I feel like, even taking an account last week from Steele, by the end of the season, Tuke will at least level him, if not get him, you know, because that fixture is fantastic. Even, you know, Matty Rao, those sort of guys as well. So don't stress too much about that. But you did bring up an interesting point, MJ, about this whole forward situation. I know Corey talked about what to do with sort of Harry Mackay. He was, you know, sort of flirting with the idea of trading him out now. But, you know, with kind of the averages, it is like, I don't think you try to trade her, Harry, even though, you know, he got the 75 last week, he still has a break even of 70. But more importantly, the other forward options outside the ones you've obviously named, which Heaney, Jackson, which a lot of people are looking at potentially trading out Flanders. So we know Heaney and Flanders are the clear one and two. But you kind of go through the rest of the averages, and you've got Harry Mackay. I'll take Comben out of this because obviously one game for forward. So Harry Mackay's in at four. Then you've got Hogan, Zorko, as well as he's playing, but, you know, he's 35 now. Maxi King, we ignore Georgiades, and then there's Tom Powell. So there's not a huge amount of forwards. Maybe Shai Bolton a little bit further down, but he's got the bye next. But yeah, it's not like there's a whole lot of these forwards who are putting their hand up going, please pick me now, that I feel like you can kind of get away with having a couple of these rookies who, you know, averaging sort of 60, 70, that the gap between sort of them and these guys in that sort of 90 mark isn't that huge compared to some of the other lines. So my thoughts, Corey, is I wouldn't be trading out that. Oh, your thoughts on Harry McCann out, brought him. I wouldn't be trading him out for Flanders. I'd be trying to find another way to get Flanders in. But what are your kind of general thoughts on the forward line?
Oh, they're pretty gross, to be fair. And we knew this heading into the season. We got pretty lucky with Jackson and we got pretty lucky with Heaney that's really protected it. And you could probably throw a Tom Powell into the mix of that as well. I think they're pretty critically important players. And you mentioned that sort of top line forward options at the moment. Really, people are looking at jumping off a Jesse Hogan. They're looking at jumping off a Harry Mackay. But who to? There's just no great options that are there. Yes, if you don't have Heaney, big miss, and you've probably missed multiple opportunities, you sometimes just need to take your medicine and you're going to have to figure a way to get it and make some moves to protect that. Powell, I think, has been important for people. Flanders post-buy. If it wasn't last week, it's definitely this week because that fixture that you mentioned for Gold Coast and Miller, oh, that cannot be understated. You do not want to miss that run because it's not, as you've said, what's been. It's about what's coming and what you're paying for. And Miller over the next 6 to 8 weeks for inside mids is a beautiful set of fixtures. So to me, Mackay, I wouldn't be doing it. Darcy's scoring fine for us. I think Comben, even if he just goes 70 from here on, is fine for us. We've still got Reed, who's doing a job for us. We've still got a bunch of other options that are fieldable for us, and we're going to be protected over the next 2 weeks with DPP coming and best 18. There's a small chance that we pick up Riley Sanders. He's in that margin of error territory where two or three, you know, quarters either way might define it. But all of a sudden, we don't need a forward upgrade just yet. As long as you've got Flanders and Heaney, I think Jackson, regardless with Darcy, is going to be around the mark. Zorko average will be there. It's about games and about sub vests that will stunt his growth. I think Powell's going to be close enough. I think Mackay is going to be close enough. I think Hogan, even still with the fixture, even though it's a bit tougher, is still going to be close enough too. So yeah, absolutely. But I don't want to really trade into any forward premiums that aren't Heaney or Flanders with any great acceleration at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I'll take a few more here because then we do have to move on. Advice for Dawson owners. It's a great question because a lot of us are now talking about the fact that when can we target Dawson to get him in? It does seem to be improving each week. So I feel like you're just at the point where you've got to suck up the fact that you've lost 100K. Big deal. Like you, if you take him the view that yeah, you picked him as a premium, you know, the price is going to go up and down. Yeah. The, you know, the average hasn't been there so far, but there'd be nothing worse than sort of trading him out with 100K loss only for everybody else then to trade him in and then get on when he gets on a roll. And, you know, it didn't look that far away on the weekend against Melbourne, who are a very accomplished team. You know, a tough match against Carlton this week, but he's got the ability to, you know, score well against them. So even if he is another 90 or 100 next week, you know, there are games going to come for Dawson where I think he'll turn the corner for sure. And he, outside of that Fremantle 170 last year, he kind of did a little bit this last season. You know, yeah. he it was slightly a little bit better, 110, 114, but he still had the 97, the 78 in there. And then, you know, he did have the explosion of the big games he did. So, yeah, I feel like as Adelaide get kind of their act together and it will turn at some point for them, I think you've just got to kind of ride it now. I guess you're the same there, mate.
Yeah, all you're doing is you're doubling down the mistake that's been made. And that's saying hindsight mistake, not forecasting that it was a mistake. It was always a good option for you to start, but the price only matters when you trade the player. And you have now, by trading him out, you're banking a loss of 100K and you're then going to forecast a way to trade into him because his ownership is going to get to such a high level that, as you've mentioned, it will click for him and the Crows midfield eventually. You'll then be using a secondary trade and your 100K down and your 4 weeks of poor premium scores down. So, no, take your medicine. The price doesn't matter to you. To everybody else, it does, but to you, it doesn't. Start looking what you can do elsewhere. Do you need to take a Degoe on as an upgrade option for you where others might not have that desire of risk appetite? You need to find a way to make up those money elements that you've lost and those points that you've lost. So your risk appetite might need to change, but please don't trade him out because you are just compounding the pain you've done by just making it worse for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I love our community. Julie's answered this question above for somebody else, but talking about Ramson, I 100% agree. When Mitch Lewis comes back, he will be there. It's probably we get another free look at him. If for whatever reason next week they come out and say Lewis is going to be longer, then yeah, potentially you could look at that. But there's no need to move on him after one game. It just doesn't make sense. A couple of people saying, you know, is Grundy down to meet to bank the money, to hold the money for when those dual position come, or as a potential, as Jimmy has said here. What is your thoughts about banking cash for compared to sort of maximizing as much money on field as you can?
Well, I think it's a fine balancing act for us sometimes, because we should always be not just thinking about what we're doing this week. We should always be looking for 2 to 3 weeks ahead. While we might not know all the variables in play of exactly who and how, but we know we're wanting to activate, you know, in Jimmy's case, he wants to activate that cash, I would presume, the following week, really, really quickly. To me personally, just in that specific scenario, I'm not a huge fan. I think Grundy was a pathway to do one of two things for you. I think nobody really expected him to be a season-long hold. To me, he's done what Cherry has done, which is score close enough to the premiums at a significant value space. He's not quite been there. And if you run with Grundy too long, you get stuck in this awkward spot for him in a year where it's not, you're losing 20 to 25 points per game every week to the top options, but you can't prioritize moving him off because he's still getting 90-ish and 100-ish and you've got to get the cows off the ground and failed mid prices and all that kind of stuff. So to me, Meek just feels like, yeah, you bank 200K, but I'd want to then activate that straight away. Otherwise, you're down the same level of scoring and the gap is there and you're not making that move of points back by activating the cash. So if you're using it on field and an upgrade this week, I'd feel a little bit more okay about it. But without knowing your team, what's your risk appetite, all those variables, personally, I'd say get Marshall. Get a top line ruck while you can. Where anytime I can get a top line option, I take it when I can get it, and Marshall is right for the picking.
Yeah, exactly. All right, last question, because we do need to move on. I will try to get back on Friday before the footy kicks off then. As I said earlier, I've got some commitments on Thursday, but yeah, just remember Melbourne, Brisbane, lock in your VC and captains there, and that will be the last question I will ask. Is VC as simple as Max Gawn on Thursday night this week, even though obviously we do have players, non-playing players, or is there other options you kind of like, VC and captain, mate?
Yeah, there's a couple of options. Again, risk appetite to me is always the big thing, but Max is an obvious VC. If you're a Dunkley or a Neil owner, I don't hate that if you want to go a little bit unique. If you're looking for just massive ceiling, Nick Martin Friday night against the Bulldogs could absolutely go 150 and really tear it apart. Defenders against the Bulldogs, for as long as Luke Beveridge has been a coach, has been a thing in Supercoach that we have known. So he is definitely a play. To me, like, I'm personally trading into Rowan Marshall via Brody Grundy this week. There is like six great options before that first Saturday game. You've got those Bulldogs options that you can run. English is a fine option to VC. Libba, of course. Bont, of course. Merritt, of course. But yeah, I think Gawn's as good as any of the options we've got rolling through there. McInerney can be a tough matchup at times. That's the only thing I'll kind of say there. But yeah, if I was looking purely for ceiling, and then I had safety net of a Marshall, who I think is a safety net, I'd go crazy on Nick Martin. Just personally, and I just like to take a risk sometimes. But you've got some really good options later in the week too to really save you as well. So yeah, it's plenty of good options early.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. I also don't mind the fact that, you know, the Suns are playing the Hawks up there. So if you were bringing in a Tukey or a Rowley, Flanders, but I feel like they're probably maybe they're the high ceilings cap, but easily 130, those guys could go. Yep. My probably safe bet maybe as a captain is Butters most weeks and that. Like, yep. Even he played, you know, didn't have the greatest game last week and still got, you know, 119. So he's pretty safe as a backup. You've got Tom Green as well playing the Saints. You know, he's just a bull. He in a poor game again, you know, still managed to turn up. You probably go better again this week, yeah. You know. So there are so many options wandering around this week for us. I don't think we're sure, but it's a whole, like, most of the community last week had Gorner. I did put up that the fact that 60% of the top 1% had Gorn as their VC, great score of 129. Obviously, then they lost points out to Heaney playing against West Coast. You had to take the 129. You're always going to back that score. But, the fact that those who did jump on Heaney, got that sort of 30, 40-point boost over everybody else. I don't mind that idea of trying to find maybe going against the grain for your VC. The only issue is if, Gorn was to get anywhere close to that 215 that he scored last year, you're going to find yourselves in a bit of trouble. So the guy's a freak. So I'm feeling like maybe safety this week with Maxi, but I don't mind that Bulldogs Essendon game because there are a couple of really nice choices. But thank you so much. We've got to move on. Coaches panel is where you find MJ for those who aren't following him, but you should be because it's one of the best in the business. So really do appreciate that. Really appreciate you, all the people jumping on to us, asking questions as always. I'll have my team review up and then I'll be back on Friday. MJ, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Mate, always a pleasure. Here's the thing. How about in 24 hours' time, I have you on one of our podcasts as well for our Supercoach Strategy Roundtable. So Wednesday evening, the video and the audio podcast will drop that as well. So 24 hours, can I have you jump on one of ours to not just repay the favor, but have you share some of your Supercoach wisdom with our community as well, mate?
Absolutely, 100%. I'll be there, mate.
Done. Awesome. Wednesday night, lock it in. He's in.
Lock it in, guys. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon. Bye all.